Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back. Today's Daf is Ksuba Yismem Dalad, and we are holding at the third line from the top of the Amud Amar Mar. Let's pick up where we left off yesterday. This fellow wrote two Ksubais for his wife. He writes one Ksuba, which contains a standard commitment, 200 zuz, dated Echad b'Nissan. Then he follows with another Ksuba, containing a commitment for 300 zuz. So you added a third. The thing is that this document is dated a month later. So what does Rav Huna tell us? She can pick and choose. It's up to her which shtar she wishes to use. She can use the first shtar with the 200 zuz, but there's an advantage there because it's from the earlier date. Or she can choose to use a later shtar. Contains a higher amount. It went up to 300, but it is bound by the later date. Now, you may ask, what effect does the date written in the shtar have on the collection of that debt? The answer is, because the date recorded in a document is the effective start date of the lien imposed on this fellow's properties, in which case the claimant can collect any properties which he may have sold after that effective lien date had begun. So here she has a choice. She can go ahead and tap into the first shtar, although it has a disadvantage. It's a lower amount, but it has an advantage. It's dated earlier, which allows her to collect any properties which he may have sold off after that early date. Or she can choose to go with the second shtar, higher amount, but a later date. So according to Rav Huna, both documents, in this case, they're ksubais, they're perfectly valid. It's not that one negates the other. They're both fine. You can only use one of them. Pick and choose which one you want. It's a package deal. Each one has a mala and a chesaron, an advantage and a disadvantage. Go with whichever one suits you best. So that's Rav Huna's halacha. So the Gemara will refer back to this halacha and elaborate on it. Amar Mar, let's go back and review. There are two ksubais. Which one may she use? Either one. Ibaya. If she chooses, Bahai Gavya. She can collect using one ksuba. V'ibaya. If she chooses, Bahai Gavya. She can use the other one for collection. Leima Pliga de Rav Nachman. Apparently, Rav Huna's halacha is in dispute with Rav Nachman, the Amar Rav Nachman, Shtei Shtaris Hayoytzim Bezeh Echar Zeh. If there are two documents, one after the other, on the same property, Reuben sold Shimon this field today. There's another document, Reuben sold Shimon the same field the next day. Bitel Sheni Asarishin. The second shtar is in effect nullifying the first shtar. You can't have two shtaris describing the same transaction. Apparently the second one is the valid one, which undoes the first one. Whether we're speaking about two sales, two gift letters. And here Rav Huna says, it's up to her which one she wants to use. The answer is love mi itmar Allah. Haven't we learned a pshat on Rav Nachman? Om Rav Papa. It all depends on the situation. Omoyde Rav Nachman. Even Rav Nachman, who maintains that shtar 2 nullifies shtar 1, he would agree in the following case. If there's a difference in terms of content, in terms of packaging the transaction. De'i oisif be'dikla. Suppose he added another component, another element. He added more content. In the second shtar. In the second shtar, he added another palm tree and included it in the sale. Litei sefes kasve. In which case, it indicates to us that the purpose of the second document was not to clash with the first one, rather to add. To add that palm tree. So just a mashal. It means to say that there's some sort of addition in terms of content or otherwise in the second shtar. That's the reason why he wrote it. But the first shtar is still fine. It's up to him. He wants to use the first shtar without the palm tree. Okay. He'll miss the palm tree, but he has the earlier date. Or he can choose to use the second shtar, the later date, but it has the palm tree. Ha'chanami ha'isif lo. Likewise by us. Ha'isif lo midi. The husband added another 100 over the first shtar, which only had 200. That's why he wrote another one. For 300. It's a ha'isafa. It's an addition. He's trying to supplement. So now she has a choice. She can choose to go with the earlier date, if that suits her better, and end up with 200, or go with the second shtar, which gives her 300 from the later date. Gufa, let's go back to Omar of Nachman. Shnei shtaris. Hayotim bezeh harzeh. You have two documents written, one after the other, describing the same exact deal. Bitel sheni sarishim. Number two nullifies number one. Omar Papa. So the Gemara already referred to this Rav Papa before. Now we're going to proceed in greater detail. Omar Papa. Moider Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman would agree. The Isabe Dikla. If he added a palm tree in the second shtar, which was not present in the first shtar, that was the reason why he wrote the second shtar, but not to undo the first shtar. And the Gemara explains further. What about the following case? That's Pashit, Pshita, it's obvious. Then in the next two cases, we view the second shtar as trying to supplement the first shtar, because there's an additional component in number two, not present in number one. Pshita, Rishon b'mecher. The first document records a sale. This field was sold to Shimon. V'sheni b'matana. Come the second document, we find it described as a gift being given to Shimon. Certainly in this case, we say, le'yapois k'ychayu d'kasav le'i. The reason why he wrote the second document was to grant additional powers and privileges to Shimon above and beyond the powers that he received through the first shtar, the bill of sale. What additional powers would he receive through the second shtar, which describes it as a gift? Mishum dino de bar metzra. He can avoid the bar metzra claim. Bar metzra means a neighbor. So typically, a neighbor has the ability to step forth and he has first refusal rights. That's what they call it today. So when Reuven sells property to Shimon, a fellow who owns the neighboring property has first rights. It makes it easier for him to attend to two properties if they're next to each other, etc. So he has rights. Din of the bar mitzvah, the din of the neighbor, to get priority. Access to that property, right? But that's only by a sale. Because it's based on the pasuk, which says, Ve'asisa ha'yashar v'ha'toiv. Hashem implores us to do what's right. Do what's gracious. Asisa ha'yashar v'ha'toiv. You're selling it anyways. You're out to make the money. Why don't you sell to the neighbor who can benefit from this sale more than that stranger who's just coming in here from nowhere? That only applies to a mecher. I'm selling it, may as well sell it to him, but a matana, I want to give it as a gift to him. He's my good friend. The bar mitzvah has no claim, so that's why he added another shtar. First he sold it. By a sale, a bar mitzvah can interfere. So he added the shtar matana to sort of turn it into a gift. I'm giving it to him as a gift. In which case, the neighbor can have no complaints. It's almost like, if you'll complain, I'll really turn it into a gift. I'll give him back his money. So that's why he presented him with another shtar. to give him that option. That's all. He wasn't trying to undo. He wasn't trying to negate the sale. He was trying to add and to empower the recipient of that field. That's a Tosefos. And therefore, both documents can stand. The Kolshkin certainly says the Gemara, if it's in the reverse, Rishon v'matana v'sheni v'mechav, the first document recorded a gift, v'sheni v'mechav, and the second described it as a sale. Of course, in this case, we understand why he upgraded it to a sale. D'amrinan mishum dina d'bal chayv, who the cause of Cain, we understand. He turned him into a sale, so that the recipient can now have a lien on the seller's property. Say the field will be snatched by a creditor of the seller. So the fact that he now has a document to show, to prove that he purchased it, he can now come back and lay claim on the seller's properties after the creditor of the seller took away his property. That only works by a sale. But if I give you a gift, you can't have any complaints if somebody comes and takes it away. It's not a guaranteed transaction. So we understand why he added the Shtar Mechar after having written the Shtar Matana. It's a Tosefos. It adds empowerment and adds privileges. So in these two cases, where Shtar number two upgraded the recipient's Zechus, we don't say Shtar 2 negates Shtar 1. The point was to give him the additional schus if he chooses to use that Shtar. Or he can choose to use the first Shtar, if that suits him better. So in both cases, Rav Nachman would agree, both Shtaris, both documents, stand tall and are valid. But, ish neim b'mecher, if both documents describe the transaction as a sale, Shtar 1 speaks about this field being sold to Shimon, and Shtar 2 does the same exact thing. Or Shneim b'matana, both describe the transaction as a gift. It's a redundancy. And therefore, Bitel Sheni Sarishen, the second Shtar, is ultimately negating and nullifying the first Shtar, and he can only claim based on the second Shtar and the date recorded within. My Taima. Why would the second star be mevatel the first star? We have two reasons. Rafram Amar, he explained like this. Amar, we assume, oiduye oidile. We take it as a concession, as though Shimon, the recipient of that second star, why is he taking another star? He's conceding. He's being made that star number one was worthless. It was a forged star. By the very fact that Shimon is insisting and receiving another star on that same property, describing the same exact transaction as recorded in the first star, indicates that the first star is worthless. It's a forged star. The signatories in the first star are worthless. The lawyers. Rav Acha Amar, he explains, Amar, because we assume Achuli Achli. He was Michael, Lishibudei, he was Michael, his claim. Although it was my field from day one, through that first transaction describing that first star. I'm not denying the validity of that star describing that transaction, but I'm Michael, by way of accepting a new star with a later date, I'm in effect relinquishing, so to speak, my claim, not my ownership, my claims. And my claims will only commence starting from the date in this star. So let's say, in terms of the lien on the seller's properties, it only starts effective from today. I'm giving up all claims until today. Why would he do that? Maybe the seller asked him for a favor. He has an interest in the buyer relinquishing, claims until today. Or maybe, as the Rush says, the buyer got wind of the fact that the seller had had declared, had made a haidah, maidah it's called, before the actual sale, that whatever I do is null and void. So he wants to circumvent all those things. He says, hey, let's start fresh. Let's make a new start from today. But technically, he was the owner from the time written in the first time. It might be now any difference between this pshat and that pshat, whether the reason for shtar number two negating shtar number one is because he's being moided that shtar number one is worthless, or is it because he's just giving up? He's willingly, so to speak, giving up his shibud, his claims until today. Might be now. It could be now. There are three differences. Number one, arui sahati. What is the status of the Adam who signed that first shtar? Do we view them as men of integrity, and we can trust them going forward and other testimonies that they might present? Or do we say, no, look, this fellow admitted that they are liars. They were involved in a forged document, in which case we can't trust them any longer. As Tosis explains, says Tosis was speaking that at least he, the recipient, who's conceding, he shouldn't be using those Edom, who according to his account, are falsifiers. So that's if you work with Rafram's approach, that we view the second shtar and his involvement in the second shtar as a haidah, a concession, as per the falsehood of the first shtar, falseness of the first shtar. But according to Rav Acha's pshat, he never meant to say as much. I was just willingly giving up. I was being meichel the shibud. The first star is a perfect star, and the Edom are perfectly fine Edom. That's one afkamina. Urshlumis peri. Suppose he had some peris between these two periods, between when the star was written and then the second star, between the first and second star. So he consumed the peris in the field. Does he have to repay for that? Well, according to Rafram, yes. Because his acceptance of his second star is tantamount to concession that the field didn't belong to him until now. So you have to pay up. Whereas according to Rav Acha, of course it belonged to me. I was just meichel on my claim until today. Number three, Ulataska. Who pays the property taxes? According to Rafram, well, it turns out that it belonged to the seller until today. He pays. According to Rav Acha, the buyer pays, because he was the owner from day one. And the Ra'ah points out, he has a kasha, just because I admit that it was yours until now, you have to pay taxes? My haidah could obligate you? So he says, yeah, because the taxes are paid by the one who has the fruit, who consumes the produce. And if it turns out that my agreement, my concession, my haidah allows you to claim repayment for all the produce that I produced, I consumed until today, then you have to pay the property taxes as well. It's a package deal. It goes hand in hand. So bottom line is, when dealing with a double shtar written today, another shtar tomorrow, regarding the same event, same transaction, how do we deal with it? So pretty much we have three levels, three cases. If he'll actually write into the second shtar that I'm trying to add such and such over the first shtar. Tosis points this out, and this is based on the Gemara that we learned yesterday. Then, of course, there's no clash at all. Within the second shtar, there is reference to the first shtar being valid, so it's fine. But if there is no such indication in the second shtar, but there is a haysafa, he added a palm tree, he gave him extra powers, he made him into a matana instead of just a mecha, or the other way around. So in that case, both documents are valid. You have a choice. You can use whichever one suits you better. But if both shtars are in the same plane and describing the same exact transaction, now we have a collision. Rav Nachman tells us, shtar number two undoes shtar number one. Why? For one of two reasons. Either it's a haidah, that shtar number one is false, or he's relinquishing, he's giving up, he's being meichel on the shibud until today. My Havela the Ksuba. Let's go back to the Ksuba. A similar question we had yesterday. Not exactly two Ksubas. Rather, a conventional case. He engages in Isha. The engagement activates the Chiyuv Ksuba. But then, only before marriage, do they actually sit down and write the Ksuba and put it into, you know, formal form. So the question was, when does her claim begin? When does her lien start? Which would allow it to collect any properties that the husband may have sold after her lien commenced. Does it start from the moment of Erusin, when he becomes Chayiv, or it only starts when he actually sits down to write the Ksuba and it becomes formalized? My Havela the Ksuba, what's the conclusion regarding the Ksuba? Tashma, the Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishmur, Belazar, Rav Shimon. Mon umasayim, mena erusin, the basic amount, the 100 for the Be'ula, the 200 for the Besula, that's claimed from the moment of erusin, from engagement. But the Sefes, mena nesuim, but the added amount, which a husband typically adds over the base amount, that was only activated when he actually wrote the Ksuba at the point of marriage. So her claim, as per that amount, relates to nesuin. That's one shita. They disagree. Whether the base amount or the additional amount, it's activated at Nisun, so she pretty much like sort of gives up any claims that she has until then, because that's when it gets formalized. And that's the halacha l'maisa, it starts from Nisun. So bottom line is, we have two shtaros or two ksubos, they're both equal, both describing the same thing. She collects from the date of the sheni. Why? Because we assume the first one is forged, or he was Meichel, the Shibud, as per the first one. If in the second one there's some additional information, some additional content or empowerment, then the fellow has a choice. He can collect using the first one or the second one. Certainly if he added the words of Oisifis, that I'm sort of just adding over the first one, then you can use both of them. It's not either or. You can use both of them. You can use the first star for the amount written in the first star, and then you can use the second star for the supplemental amount. Regarding when does the shibud begin, is it erusin or nisun? The halacha is, it starts from nisun. Continues the mission. Hagirushin is gaira bita ima. We have an older woman who converted, and she brings along her small young daughter. Even if she's below 3 years old, in which case she's presumed to be a besula. Vizinsa, she gets involved in inappropriate behavior while she's a nara and engaged. Typically, the einish for that is skila, death by stoning. But since she was not born Jewish, in this case, we give her a different type of misa, harizu b'chenek, by way of choking. Now, we know there's a parsha in the Torah called Maitzi Shamra. This fellow claims that he discovered his wife to be a non-basula after marriage. So one of two things may have happened. Adam come and say, yeah, she was involved in znus during engagement. In which case, she is severely punished with skila, which takes place at the doorstep of her father's home. Look how you raised your daughter, etc., etc. If it turns out that he's trumping up the charges, it's all fabricated, then he's in the wrong and he's punished. He has to pay a fine, 100 kesef. He gets a malchus. He has to marry her. Stay married to her. But all these halachas typically apply strictly to a case where she's a full-fledged Yisraelis, conceived and born Jewish. If that's not the case, then perhaps some or all of these details will not apply, as the Mishnah will explain. Ein lo le pesach beis avia. So now we're referring to a Geirus, who was born before Geirus. So in this case, if it turns out that she committed znus during engagement, ain't no lepesach beisavia. So just like she doesn't get skila, she gets chenek, it will not take place at the door, at the entranceway to her father's home. Because technically she doesn't even have a father. Her Geisha father doesn't really identify with her. V'loy mea sela nor. Will the mea sela fine apply to him if it turns out that he is making it all up? the husband, that is. So that's the first case. A geyeris, in her case, none of these halachas apply. Let's say she was conceived before her mother converted, but she was born Jewish, and she goes up a notch. It turns out that she committed zinus during engagement. Harizub is skila, she gets skila. But of course, again, there's no father's doorway because she doesn't relate to her father, who conceived her when she was not Jewish. If it turns out that the husband is the one fabricating the charges, he won't be fined 100 sela. Let's say she was conceived and born Jewish. She's a full-fledged Israelis. We treat her like a regular member of the community. She gets skila. If she was a Nara Murasu Diznus, Yeshla, oh. Now, let's say she's a regular Bas Yisrael. And Yeshla Av. And yeah, she has a father. Father's around, but he doesn't own a home. He lives on a boat. Ve'ela Pesach Be'sa'av. There's no doorway to his house. Or, Yeshla Pesach Be'sa'av. There's a doorway, but there's no father around. He passed away. Ve'ela Av. Still, we move on with the Skila. Harezu Be'skila. Wa'ile Nema Pesach Be'sa'via. Ela Mitzvah. Typically, you try to do it at the Pesach Beis Av, but it's only a mitzvah, which does not hold back the skila. So we have three levels in the Mishnah. A regular Israelis, all dinim apply. She's in the wrong, she gets skila. He's in the wrong, he gets punished. If she's a Giyoyres, born, non-Jewish, none of these halachas apply. Not on her side, not on his side. But if it's somewhere in the middle, conceived non-Jewish, but born Jewish, we include her somewhat, pertaining to the halachas applying to her. She's in the wrong, she gets skila. But pertaining to the halachas applying to him, if he's in the wrong, getting the malchus and the mea kesef, that doesn't apply. That only applies if he schemed against a regular Bas Yisrael, but not in this case. But how do we know that the skila would apply to her in this case? Minahani mili, how do we know this is true? And Taisa says, what do you mean? It says be Yisrael. Why would you create that middle category? In which case, you somewhat apply some of the halachas. She wasn't conceived and born Jewish. None of the halachas should apply. Amar Reish Lakish, the Makra, the Pasuk says, Umeisa. Pasuk says, they stone her and Umeisa and she died. Meisa is an extra word. The rabbi is to include this middle case, Hayrasa Shele Bekdusha, although she was conceived, non-Jewish, but since Ve'edas Bekdusha, she was born Jewish, the halach of Skila applies. Yach, if that's the case, treat her like an ordinary Bas Yisrael. Milka nami lilki. Milki. If her husband turns out to be in the wrong, let him get malchus. Umeya sela nami l'shal. Let him pay up the 100 sela. Amakra umesa. The pasuk that taught us the skila was the word umesa, which teaches us lumisa and nisrapsa. She's included regarding the misa aspect of this process, but not to the knas aspect of the process. So we include the Isha who was Leidasa Bekdusha, even though she was not conceived Jewish. Asks the Gemara, once you have a Ribui, let's go a step further. Let's go to the other case, the other extreme. Ve'emala Rabbi Sayrosa Leidasa Bekdusha. Sorry. Who says, just the opposite, who said that the Pasuk will include this middle case? Maybe the Pasuk is coming to speak about a case where her mother converted, but then conceived and bore the child, Bikidusha. Well, let's say she was conceived non-Jewish, it wouldn't apply. How do you know to include that case? Well, Ahi, a case where she was conceived and born Jewish, Yisraelis Mal Yisahi, she's a full-fledged Yisraelis, there's no need to discuss that. Rather, the Torah is adding a case where she was conceived non-Jewish, but since she was born Jewish, that is sufficient. But once you're including, let's include all the way. How do you know to stop there? Maybe we'll include the Isha, who was conceived and also born non-Jewish and then converted. You can't be Israel, my honey, late, if that were the case. Why would the Pasuk say be Israel? To indicate that you need to relate to Israel. Something had to be Israel, either the Hayrasa and Leidasa, or at least Leidasa. But if none happened, if she was conceived and born Shaloi Bekdusha, of course, none of these halachas would apply. So bottom line is we have three levels. Conceived and born Jewish, full-fledged Israelis. Conceived and born prior to conversion, none of these halachas apply. Conceived non-Jewish and born Jewish, part of the process applies. If she's in the wrong, she gets skila, like a Bas Yisrael. But if he's in the wrong, there is no penalty process applied. Amar b'yesi barchanina. Suppose his wife doesn't have a father. He married a Israelis, no father. He's Maitzi Shemra. He spreads these malicious rumors. The process of Maitzi Shemra does not apply. Why? When the Pasuk describes handing over the fine, who does he hand it over to? The father of the Nara. Prat lezu she'en la'av, as opposed to this girl who has no father, where the process doesn't apply. Masiv Rabbi Yisi bar Abin, v'yitema some say Rabbi Yisi bar Zvida. The pasuk says v'yimayin yimayin avia. This is by the oines, sorry, by the mafate. So he's meant to marry her, unless she or her father object. La Rabbi Yisi soim leknas, divei Rabbi Yisi aglili. So according to Rabbi Yisi Aglili, the Pasuk is alluding to a case where there's no father. The Pasuk is saying, "Ma'in yimayin avia." We learn that father can object, or if there's no father, she's an orphan, she can object. Apparently, the concept of knas applies even when there's no father, although the Pasuk did say, hand over the money to the father. Yeah, when there is a father. But it's not a prerequisite which would hold up the process. So according to Rabbi Yisi Aglili, here as well, by Maitzi Shemra, we have the Pasuk, V'nasnu l'avi anara, hand the money over to the father. Fine, when there's a father, but otherwise, the process still proceeds. So even a Yusayma would have this process. That's a kasha. Our Rabbi Yisi Rechaninu says a Yusayma doesn't have the whole process. Hu moisevla, hu mefarakla. The same person who asked the kasha turned around and gave an answer. The solution is like this. When the Brisa speaks about a girl without a father, we're speaking that the incident took place when he was around. And then she lost him. And since at the point of incident there was a father, that is enough. So according to this shita, no father, no Motzi Shemra. Rav Amachaya. Rabbi disagrees. Even without a father, the process continues. The penalties apply. Mimai, how does Rabbi know this? Midatani Ami, based on a brisa presented by Ami. Pasuk says, well, this fellow who fabricated this story about the Bas Yisrael has to pay up. Why? Because he was Moitzi Shemra al Besul as Yisrael. Why does the Pasuk have to say Besul as Yisrael? As opposed to if she's a ger. Now, I amrus b'shloima ki'ay gavna b'yisrael mechayiv. The pasuk is saying, if she's a geyeres, we don't apply the process. Now, this works well. I amrus b'shloima ki'ay gavna b'yisrael mechayiv. If we should encounter a similar circumstance by a bas yisrael, a circumstance which mirrors a ger, it would be chayev. What is he saying? Basically, what he's saying is like this. A girl who is a ger is really tantamount to a yisayma. She's an orphan. For all practical purposes, she has no father. No halach father, Rashi explains. She no longer identifies or relates or associates with her non-Jewish father. In the Torah, we consider them to be totally separate entities. So for all practical purposes, she's a Yisrael. So if you tell me that typically by a Yisrael, a Yisrael is Chayiv and Maitzi Shemra, that explains the Pasuk. Haino de Itzrich Krolim Utegir. Okay, that's what the Pasuk has to say. Although a Bas Yisrael, who is a Yisrael, has Maitzi Shemra, but by a Ger we don't apply it, as we explained in the Mishnah. Eli, Amras B'Yisrael, Kagavna Pata. But if you should tell me that by a Yisrael girl, there's no father, there's no Maitzi Shemra, then why do we need a pasuk to exempt a ger? Hash to be Yisrael pot. If you tell me that even by Yisrael without a father, he's potter by ger, my buddies ever need to speak about a ger being potter? Of course there's no chiv. Not only doesn't she have a father, she's even a ger. There's no need to speak about it. That's the biggest proof that there is Mitzvah Shemra even by a Yisrael, provided that she's Yisrael. Amir Shlokish. Ha Mitzvah Shemra laktana potter. This fellow schemed against his wife who was just a ketana. Turns out that he's in the wrong. There's no penalty. Why? Shenema v'nosnu lavi anara. He hands over the fine to the father of the inara. And if we take a look at the spelling of the word na'ara, na'ara mole dibra kosev. Torah adds the hey at the end to indicate she must be a real na'ara past bas mitzvah, but a ketana would not qualify. Maske flor of acha bar av. Why do you need this special diyuk of the hey? Tama d'ksiv b'hanara. That's only because of the word hanara, which indicates that she's a nara. Holav hochi, but otherwise, if not for this diyuk, hava amina, I would say, afilu k'tana, even a k'tana would qualify? That's impossible. Ha'ksiv, the pasuk, speaks about her being found in the wrong. She committed an inappropriate act. What happens? We give a skila. That can't be speaking about a k'tana who's not responsible for her actions. V'yememah soya adavar. Hazeh. Turns out the story was true. Lo nimtzu b'sul anara. She didn't have psulim. She engaged in znus. Voitziyus anara el pesach beisavia. They take the nara to the entranceway of her father's home. V'skalu, and they apply skila. That can't be a ktana. Uktana lavas oishin hi. Ktana doesn't have responsibility for her actions. Even without the diuk of nara, it's obvious that she's not a ktana. Ella, rather, Rish Lakish meant like this. That a mitzvah shemra must be a gedolah, that's obvious. Kan na'aro. And that's exactly why the pasuk spells it in full, na'aro, with a hey, to indicate here by mitzvah shemra, where she is a gedolah, that's why she's called a na'aro. And this is meant to teach you, ha kol makim shenemar na'ar, apparently elsewhere in the Torah, where it says Nara without a hey, afilu ktana b'mashma, that's coming to include even a ktana. Nara with a hey is a gdola, like by mitzvah shemra, but it must be a gdola, otherwise it wouldn't be any skill. But otherwise, if it's Nara without a hey at the end, kamakum shenema Nara without a hey, like by knas of oines, afilu ktana b'mashma, even a ktana is included in that shittas chachamim. Unlike Shitas Rav Meir, who holds it has to be a Nara by Knas as well. That was Rish Lakish's point. Okay, let's summarize today's daf. We started with the sugi of the two stories, or the two ksubos, so sort of clashing with each other. If they're both identical, then you use the second one. The first one was either forged, or he gave up the rights regarding the first one. If he adds some, you know, extra component in the second one, unpresent in the first one, that explains why he wrote the second one. Not to undo the first one, but to add. And therefore you have a choice. You can use either the first one from that earlier date, or choose to use the second one from the later date. Certainly if he actually indicated in the second shtar that it was supplementing the first shtar, in that case, you're even better. You don't have to choose one over the other. You can use both shtaris. You can take the first shtar and collect with it, based on the first date, and the supplement indicated in the second shtar, you can collect that as well based on this second date. At what point does her lien get applied to her husband's properties? Is it Erisin? Is it Nisun? Halacha is it starts from Nisun. A Mitzvah Shemra, a fellow who claims that his wife was engaged in inappropriateness during their engagement period, what happens there? If it turns out that she is in the wrong, she gets skila al pesach beisavia. If she's a nara murasa, turns out that he's in the wrong, he has punished severely as well. Meyasela malchus, he has to marry her. We have three cases: a giyurus, none of these halachas apply. If she was born Jewish, in that case the skila element applies, but the other elements don't. Harasa vileidasa b'kedusha, a full-fledged Yisrael who qualifies for the entire process. regarding a Yisayma, Mitzishamar Yisayma, we have a Machlekes, and by a Ketana, certainly, there is no process applied. All the best to you and much Hatzlacha.